Okay, if everybody could mute their phones by putting them on star six. So, last night we learned the Ramban on towards the end of Parshas Tazria. Tonight I want to learn a Ramban towards the end of Parshas Metzora. That's the Maila, I guess, of having a double Parsha, that you can do one Ramban on each Parsha. So towards the end of Parshas Metzora, the Perek Tesvav, the Torah speaks about different individuals who experience discharges, bodily discharges, and how it renders them tame. It speaks about a Zav, a man who has a discharge of pus from his genital area. It speaks about a man who's had a discharge of shichva zera, of semen. It speaks about a woman who is a nida, who has her regular menstrual flow, and a woman who is a zava, who has a flow of blood that goes beyond the typical menstrual flow. As described in the Pasuk, again, some debate among the Rishonim what exactly that means, but in general terms, the woman has a flow of blood which goes beyond the normal, regular menstrual cycle which she has. So in describing the Zav, the Pasuk says, in Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'chola sheyiga bo hazav, anything which the Zav touches, V'yadav lo shotaf bamoyim, and he literally has not washed his hands in water. V'chibes begodav, he should have to immerse his clothing. V'rachatz b'mayim etomei ad ha'orev, should wash in water, and he'll be tomei till the evening.
Charles
Cole. So in other words, it describes a situation where Zav touches something, and touches a person, and that person, you know, who's touched by the Zav, has to wash in water and becomes tomei. It makes reference to the notion that the Zav did not wash his hands. V'yadav lo shotaf b'moyim. So Rashi quickly tells us that this is not really washing hands. Really, v'yadav lo shotaf b'mayim, says Rashi, means ba'od shlo tovel mitumasa. The expression washing hands in this context refers to toveling in a mikvah. And the way to read the pasuk is, if the zav is still a zav, meaning he hasn't yet toveled in a mikvah, he hasn't yet immersed himself, he hasn't divested himself of his tumah, so then if the zav touches someone else, that person in turn will become tame. It's only once the zav goes to mikvah that he can shed himself of that tumah. The question is, why is the act of toveling in a mikvah referred to as shtifas hayadayim, again, literally washing the hands? So that's the first issue which the Ramban starts off talking about in Pasuk Yud Aleph, and then he moves into a greater discussion of some of these instances of the bodily discharges which render a person tame, as discussed in the end of the Sedra. So Yikra HaKosuv HaTvilu Shtifa B'mayim She'amar Kan V'chol Kliyevs Yishotef B'mayim. We find, not only in this Pasuk, but even in an earlier Pasuk, Pasuk Yud Beis, where or later pasuk rather, the next pasuk where it says in pasuk Yud Beis that v'chol kli eitz yishotef b'mayim, if the zav touches a wooden vessel, it is washed in water. That too refers to tevila b'mikva. V'chen yikra'enu b'begadim kibus v'chubash sheinis v'toher. So too, immersing begadim, immersing clothing in a mikvah, is referred to as kibus, which is laundering. So again, these are unusual terms to apply to tevila. Why doesn't it simply use the term vitoval, which we know is a biblical term? The term vitoval, to dip, to immerse, is utilized by the Torah. So why is it that these confusing terms, shtifas hayodayim, washing the hands, for instance, are utilized with regard to tevila? So atam, the reason that shtifa in particular is used is ba'avurki ha'tvilot tzricha shlo yiyah ba'adover chotzex. One of the requirements of tvila is that there be no impediment, that there be no foreign matter
that comes between the body of the person or the item which is going in the mikvah and the water, there can't be any kind of chatzitza. Elo yishtof kol gufo b'mayim. The entire water, the entire person's body has to be scrubbed in water. Kiloshon umorak v'shutaf b'mayim u'kmo nachal shotef. The term lishtof in this context refers to a powerful force of something. And, you know, for instance, he quotes the pasuk, Nachal Shotef, which is a pasuk in Yeshayahu. It means a fast-running stream. The fast-running stream is very powerful. And the term lishtof, as applied to over here, implies that the water has to be powerful enough to touch every part of the person or of the object. There can't be any chatzitza. It has the connotation of scrubbing something clean. So, you know, had it just said v'taval, it would have implied that you can just dip it in the water. But if the water doesn't touch every part of the person or the vessel, that'd be sufficient. Once you say v'yadav lo shataf b'mayim, once you make the use of the term shtifa, it teaches us the halachas of chatzitza, which are so important to the laws of tefillah in general. V'inyin akosu b'avur ki hanagia b'yodayim, Amar ki kasher yigabo azov biyodov, v'adayin lo shataf olsam b'shtifas kol gufo b'mayim yiyetame. But that still leaves over the question as to why the yodayim, the hands, are referred to over here. It says v'yodov lo shataf b'mayim. If the zov touches someone and his hands were not cleansed in water, what do I? That's misleading. The impression that you have is that the zov could somehow do away with his tumah simply by washing his hands. And that's, of course, not true. The Zav, in order to get rid of his state of being Tameh, has to immerse his entire body in the mikvah. So says the Ramban, the reason that the Torah speaks about the cleansing of the hands is because the hands are what the Zav uses to touch someone else. So the way to read the pasuk is, if the Zav touches someone, and his hands, which did the touching, were not immersed. Now again, it's not that he has to immerse only his hands, but, you know, he did not immerse his body. And ergo, the hands which touched the person were not immersed either. So then, the hands impart tumah to the person whom he touched. Ki'ilu Omar, it's as if he said, V'chol ha-she'yiga bo'azav bi'yodov, ve'adayin lo rachatz b'mayim, b'nirom taharoso, yichabes b'godov. Right? It's as if the words v'yodov have to be transposed into a different part of the pasuk. It's as if the pasuk should read v'chol asher yiga bo hazav biyodav, kama v'lo shotaf b'moyim, and he has not yet immersed himself in water, so then he causes tumah to come upon the other person. V'hutzrach lo malach shen shtifa, and again, as we said before, the reason that the word shtifa, to scrub, to clean with force, is utilized, is the lamid al rechitsa shiyazkir v'rachatz b'sara b'mayim chayim. Okay, so in other words, as he said before, the lashon of shtifa implies this cleansing of the hands in order to remove any chatzitza, any impediment between his hand, his body, and the water itself. It's certainly not correct to say that if the Zav has merely washed his hands, that would be sufficient to ensure that, you know, that he's not going to impart tumah. Shekvar amar ki kol anogea bibesar hazav be'ezer makom shiyeh menu tameh. The Torah has already explained that anyone who touches the Zav in any place will become tameh. V'chein b'mishkavu merkavu v'kli asher yeshev olav ad asher yitar mizovo. The Torah goes on to say that anything which the Zav sits upon, you know, which the Zav touches in some other way rather than using his hands, is certainly going to be Tameh. So it doesn't stand to reason internally, says the Ramban, that all we have to worry about is the hands. Fine. Chazal have another way, a midrashic way of explaining the fact that the Torah speaks of toveling in terms of washing hands. The reason that the Torah speaks of washing hands when it really wants to describe immersing in a mikvah is Shein beis hastarim ton bias mayim, ele ever hagoloi kemo hayodayim. There's a halacha, it's a halacha lemaisa, that the beis hastarim, any part of the body which is normally internal or covered, does not require tevila. Right? So for instance, it's not necessary for a person toveling to open up his mouth and allow the water of the mikvah to enter into his throat, such that the water should permeate the inner parts of his body. Again, I think if that was the case, far fewer people would feel comfortable being tovel. You know, it's not necessary for somebody being tovel to allow the water to come inside their mouth and, you know, touch, you know, the various parts of their throat, because the throat is a hidden area. It's a beis hastarim. You know, the inner orifices of the body need not be touched by the mikvah water. So how do we know that? So Chazal say we know it from this expression. Since the Torah describes the tevila of the Zav as washing his hands, and it's clearly not just washing the hands, but the hands are considered to be an example of the type of body part which requires tevila. Just as the hands are totally revealed, and they're not hidden in any way, so too, the parts of the body which require tevila are those which are revealed. Okay, so that was the first part of the Ramban discussing this term, shtifas hayodayim, washing the hands, which the Torah uses to describe tevila. Now he gets into the various different types of tumos, you know, which are described here at the end of the Sedra, and a little bit of background in each. V'tam tumas hazov be'ish. The man who became a zov experienced a discharge of pus from his genital area. Why should that render him tame? What did he do, you know, that would render such a person tame? So writes the Ramban, b'nei hayoso choli kaved min acholim hanidbakim. The particular disease which is manifest by this discharge of pus is a disease which is a very difficult disease. The way the Ramban describes it, he says it's a contagious disease. Oftentimes, ziva is associated with gonorrhea. So it's a contagious disease. So okay, so the guy is suffering from a contagious disease. So why make him tame? I mean, it's adding insult to injury. First he's sick, and then you're going to make him tame as well. So he says, "Vitzarich karbon loses hoda l'Hashem shiripa oso v'tiharo." The point of the Zav is that the Zav ultimately has to bring a karbon. We'll see that, again, the Zav's tahara, as described in the Pasuk, is not simply to go to mikvah, but as it says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, v'chi yitar ha-Zav mi-Zavo, when the Zav becomes tahar, v'safar lo shivas yam l'taraso v'chi bes begadav, he has to count 7 days and then go to mikvah, Uvayom Ashmini Yavi lo Yikach lo Shtei Sarim o Shnei Bnei Yona Uvalu Fnei Hashem o Pesach o Lomoyin and Osamar Lakoyin. On the eighth day, so he has to bring 2 pigeons to the Mishkan, to the Beis HaMikdash. V'asa Osamar Koyin Echor Chatos v'ho Echor Olam. One of the pigeons is then brought as a carbon chatos, as a sin offering. One is a carbon Olam. So, those carbonos, says the Ramban, are really the focus of the whole fact that the Zav became Tame. The carbon Ola, he says, is a carbon that gives thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the fact that he was healed from his Ziva. Why does he have to bring a carbon Chatos, a sin offering, says the Ramban? Because why did he become ill? Presumably because there was some kind of sin that he committed. And if there was a sin that led to his sickness, so he needs the carbon chatos to be mechaper, to atone for that sin. So the Ramban doesn't address the issue directly as to why the Zav becomes Tameh. I mean, I guess in theory, you know, one could imagine a scenario where the Zav doesn't become Tameh, but he just brings carbonos at the end of a certain period. Presumably the answer to the question as to why the Zav becomes Tame is twofold. Number one, as the Ramban just told us, the Zav presumably became Tame because of some sin that he committed. So the Tumah is associated with the sin that was manifest physically by the sickness, by the fact that it became a Zav. And number two, it seems as if the the Torah is not going to impose a karbon on the Zav without first having him experience a period of tumah. In other words, the tumah, the distancing from the mikdash, the distancing from the ability to eat karbanos and truma and the like, you know, goes hand in hand with this feeling of sickness that he experiences. You know, so sickness and tumah are tied together, according to the Ramban. That's the idea of a zav. V'tam tumah shichva zera. Why is it that a man who has an emission of semen becomes tameh? So he says, afu pishu b'teva hatolada. One might say that it's not really understandable that a person who has an emission of shichva zera should become tameh. After all, as opposed to the zav, where the emission of zov, of the spas, is considered to be something abnormal and indicative of a sickness, when a person is motzi shichva zera, and again, not necessarily being motzi shichva zera levatala, when he's motzi shichva zera, let's say in the context of a marital relationship, he also becomes tamei. It's b'teva atolada. In fact, the emission of shichva zera is a prerequisite for being able to have children. So, you know, you say it's a natural thing, it's a normal thing, it's potentially a wonderful thing. The emission of shichva zera on the part of the man is the first step in having a child. So why would that bring about tumah? So says the Ramban, it's ketam tumas hames. The reason that the motzi shichva zera becomes tameh is the same reason that a person becomes tameh when he comes into contact with a dead body. Why? Ki amakor meshaches. Because when the semen is emitted into the ultimately into the uterus of the woman, it has the potential for the semen itself being destroyed. The semen, when it was still in the man's body, had the potential of life, but not every drop of semen is going to fertilize an egg. Some of the semen is just going to lose any vitality once it's in the woman's body. Vashochev lo yodeya im yishaches zaro, o yeh mimenu vlad notzar. The man who emits shichva zera into his wife may or may not be producing a child at the end. His act may end up producing a child, and it may be a life-giving act, but it may be an act of ultimately destroying the zera, the seed. It may be an act which is wrapped up with death and the loss of life potential. Now, that's not blaming the person. I mean, the man is just having regular relations with his wife. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, you know, the only way for him to have a child, so to speak, is to play Russian roulette with the shichva zera, to emit it into the woman and to hope for the best. I mean, that's the only way he's going to have a child. But nonetheless, says the Ramban, since the emission of shichva zera carries with it the possibility, at the very least, of death and the lack of vitality, that, like tumas meis, means that it brings about an idea of tumah. Uvizachri tumas hameis be'ezes hamemes umechaya yisbar lecha hakeri. Right? Now that I've put together the idea of tumas meis, you know, the idea that a dead body imparts tumah, now you understand why shichva zera, by motzi shichva zera, brings about with it a degree of tumah as well. Va'od azkir benido ikarim. Let me speak further, says the Ramban, about the concept of nida and why that brings with it tumah. Heikel akosav bezov ho'isha ve'es nidasav lochiev bakorban bavur shei betivah v'lo nisrapes mecholi. While it's true that a woman who is a nida, in other words, she has a regular menstrual cycle, becomes tmeya, strikingly, the woman who is a nida does not have to bring a karbon at the end of the process. The woman who is a zava, who again has a flow of blood beyond her regular menstrual cycle, she does have to bring a karbon at the end of the process, but a regular nida does not. Why? So says the Ramban, because A, the menstrual cycle for the woman is natural, And B, it's not, it's not any kind of sickness that she's being healed from. Remember, just compare this to what he said about the Zav. The man who's a Zav brings a karban to give thanks to Hashem for being healed from a sickness. The woman who's a regular Nido, has a regular monthly menstrual cycle, is not being healed from anything. She's just experiencing what's natural for a woman to experience. However, and the halacha midaraisa is that a woman who has a regular menstrual cycle becomes tame for 7 days. And again, midaraisa, that's true regardless of how long she bled during those 7 days. 1 day, 2 days, 7 days, doesn't make a difference. As long as she's no longer bleeding by the time she goes to mikveh, it's fine. The average woman is not going to experience her period for more than 7 days, says the Ramban, unless she's sick. But the woman has an unusually long flow of menstrual blood. Either she goes beyond the 7 days of which would be considered to be the upper limit of a normal flow, or she experiences her period for many days at an unusual time. So then that woman who's a zava is experiencing an illness similar to that the man experiences when he had this flow of pus. And the Torah therefore requires that a zava, unlike a nida, has to bring a karbon when she's healed, just the same way that the zav did. It's interesting to note that when the Torah here talks about the woman who becomes either a nida or a zava, it doesn't describe a tevila process for her in any way. If you look in the psukim, starting with pasuk yites, the isha kisi yezava dam yezava bivisara. Right, that pasuk yites describes the regular nida, and that that description of what happens to a nida focuses entirely on the tumma that she imparts. It never talks about her going to the mikvah. Similarly, in pasuk chafhei, we begin to read about the isha who's a zava, again, who has an unusual menstrual flow. It describes the process. And then it says, in Pasuk Chafei, V'im tahara mizova, when she's ready to be tahar from this flow of blood, V'safrala shivas yamim, she should count 7 days, V'achar titar. And then afterwards she should purify herself. Now we know what that means, is that she goes to mikvah, but it never quite spells out that what it means that is that she goes to mikvah, So why should that be? So writes the Ramban, Hiskir zov ho'ish v'tumasa, since we've already described how a man who's a zov purifies himself, v'amar b'sov v'rochatz b'sov b'mayim chayim v'taher, how it describes how he has to go not only to a mikvah, but to a mayon, to a flowing source of water, mayim chayim. V'chazar v'amar b'isha v'isha kisi yazava ki'ish azav, dam yazav shelo lolobim ki'ish. Right? So when it describes the woman being a zava, it connects her experience connects and contrasts to a degree her experience with the experience of a man. V'hisker atuma benido v'zava v'acharei kein hisker b'zava v'imtoara mizova kasher yitar azov mizova. So in other words, says the Ramban, since we've already been working off of the parsha of a zav, when it says concerning the zava that she purifies herself, the understanding is she purifies herself from her being a female zava, the same way that the man purifies himself from being a zav, i.e., tevila b'mikva. She should just follow the similar kinds of things as the Zav does. Now, here this leads us to an interesting point which has relevance halacha l'maisa. Now, what the Ramban has just explained to us is that the Torah is taking for granted that the process of purification for Azava is exactly the same as it is for Azav, right? The Torah doesn't even bother spelling out that the woman who's Azava goes to Mikvah, because basically it's saying, refer back to what we said about the Zav, and whatever it says about the Zav will apply over to here as well, to the woman. Halacha l'maisa, however, there's a very significant difference between the way a Zav is metaher himself and the way a Zava is metaheris herself. The Zav can only purify in Mayim Chayim. Mayim Chayim means running water. It means going to a natural spring or the like. In contrast, a woman who's a Zava can purify herself going to a regular mikvah. Mikvah means still waters, which is a collection of rainwater, right? A mikvah is metayer be'eshbora, and it's metayer in still waters. The spring is only metayer be'zochlin, and it has to be flowing waters. So if we were to follow the pshat, says the Ramban, it should emerge that a woman who's a zava would need to go to a spring to be metayer herself, and the mikvah would not be acceptable. Now you say, okay, so what? Well, halacha l'maisa, all women today who experience a menstrual flow follow the chumras as if they were zavos, again, for reasons that are beyond the scope of this discussion. But, says the Ramban, if we were to follow the pshat in the psukim, it should emerge that a contemporary woman who needs to be metayer herself after she experiences her monthly menstruation, it would not suffice for her to go to a mikvah. She would have to go to a mayon. She would have to go to a spring of running water in order to metayer herself. In other words, 95%+ of the mikvahs in the world would not be kosher, you know, according to the simple pshat, to enable a woman to purify herself after her period of nida. There are a few mikvahs here and there in the world which are mayonos, which really are springs that are natural springs where they dig down and they hit a natural spring, and it's that water which is used for the mikvah, but they're few and far between. The vast majority of mikvahs are rainwater, or, you know, something that has the halachic properties of rainwater, which are collected and which are still. So the pshat would seem to indicate that those are no good. Avo Rabbi Seinu Ekilu B'taras Hazava Shetitar Kederach Shara Nitarim Metumasim B'mei Mikvah. It's Chazal, Chazal in their interpretation of the psukim, understood that, you know, it's sufficient for a woman who's a zava to use a mikvah and not to require a mayon. V'atam Lohem, where do they get this from? V'mnei Shlo Hoyiv Tzorech Lahaskir Klal B'achar Titar. Says the Ramban, the whole reason that a woman can make do with mikvah and doesn't need a mayon is the phrase at the end of Pasuk Chof Ches, Vim Toara Mizova, when it comes time for this woman who's a Zova to purify herself, V'safrala Shivas Yomim V'achar Titar, let her count 7 days and then she will purify herself. Why do you have to say then she'll purify herself? We understand that she should follow a similar procedure to the Zov. So, says the Ramban, the fact that it says V'achar Titar, and then she will purify herself, implies that there is a greater possibility of purification that this woman has versus what the Zav has. The Zav has to use a mayon. Here, v'achar titar, let her purify herself in any way which suffices. Right? So, you know, that's the Ramban's understanding of this pasuk. Right? So, this, in a sense, is a drasha of the Ramban himself. And Rabbi Shevel, in his notes, quotes from a Shaul Meshiv, one of the Achronim, who talks about how exactly the Ramban got this out of the pasuk. But the Ramban, again, in here, is understanding, in a sense, is making a drasha based on the pshat. The Ramban is saying, on the one hand, the pshat would seem to indicate that a zava would have to go to a mayon. But if you read the pshat closely and carefully, the pshat itself indicates that what is true of a zav is not necessarily true of a zava. V'achar titar indicates that a zava has more options. She can be metaya herself in ways that go beyond what's available to the zav, and hence we end up with a very, very important din, halacha lemaisa, that a zava, which essentially, for reasons beyond the scope of our discussion, means every single woman today who becomes a nidon has to go to the mikvah, a zava need not seek out a mayon, it's sufficient for her to be metaya herself in going to a mikvah. So again, there are a number of important points that the Rabban has stressed over here in this parsha, again in understanding the reasons behind the tumah of the individuals described over here, understanding some of the details, the halachic details involved in the tahara of some of the people we're talking about over here. And hopefully this gives us just a little bit more insight into a parsha, which as we know is a difficult parsha to really penetrate properly, you know, because of the myriad of very, very difficult details that are contained within. Okay, Be'ezus Hashem, tomorrow we'll be learning Pirkei Avos. Again, we'll be finished. We'll be doing the Mishnayos towards the end of the second Perek, which is where we left off before Yontif. So we'll be doing that tomorrow and Wednesday night, Be'ezus Hashem. At the current time, we'll take a few moments to say Tehillim and Amisha Beirach for all those who need it. Again, we'll say Tehillim, Kapitel Sadi Aleph. Yoshev v'seisar el yon, b'tzel shaddai yislonon, omar ladonai machsi umsudosi, Elohai evtach bo, ki hu yatsi lecha mipach yokush, midever avos, bevroso yosech loch, V'sachas k'nofav techseh, v'sino v'socheh ro amito, lo siro mipachad lo ilo, mecheitz yof yomom, v'dever bovel yaloch, miketav yoshut zoroyim, yipomit siddicho elef urvavom iminecho, eilecho lo yigosh, rak beinecho sabir v'shilumas v'shoim tireh, כי אתה אדוני מחסי אל יום סמטו מיונך לא סונה לך רוב ונגל לא יקרב יו עליך כי מלאך ירסה ולוך לשמורך בכל דרוכך על כפיים יסונך פן תיגוף בו אבן רגלך על שחר בופסן תדרוך תמוס כפיר וסנין כי ויחושק ויפלתיו עשה גביו כי ידע שמי יקרא עיני ועיניו עמו אנוכי וצרו החלציו ויחבדיו ערך יומי מספיאיו ויראיו בישועסי קוף למד 130 שיר המעלוס ממעמקים כרוסיכו אדוני Adonai Shema Vikoli Tien Oznecho Kashuvos Likol Tachanunai Im Avonos Tishmar Yo Adonai Miyamon Ki Emecho Asulicho Leman Tivorei Ki Visi Adonai Ki Visa Nafshi Vilidvoro Ocholti Nafshi L'Adonai Mishomerim Laboker Shomerim laboker Yachel Yisrael el Adonai Kim Adonai yacheser v'yarbei mofidus V'hu yifdes Yisrael mikol avonosov B'shevi rachav usenu Avraham Yitzchak v'yakov Moshe v'yaron Toviru shlomo yivorech v'yrapei es hacholim Bavur Shabili Nedon Alustaka, Bavur Amiskarza Kodishvor, Huimali Rach, Malayam, Lakli, one Raposam, Lakzi Kaliach Yosam, Yishlach Lohem, Eirof, Washlemam, Nashomayim, Holivariam, Hogi Demisok Shahoy, Sof was an Avishafuas Aguf, Ashtabagalov is man Koriv, and Omar, Omein. Rabosai, I played on Davening Mayav 8:31 or so. I want to wish everyone a wonderful evening, and we'll speak to everyone tomorrow.
Thank you. Good night.